Welcome to the Innovation Calling Podcast,
where we connect creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Greger
and Sia Yasotornrat.
Hey, this is Aaron Greger.
And it's Sia Yasotornrat.
And in this episode, we're bringing you our recorded version of our live event for our Women in Tech Leadership series. But before we introduce you to this guest, oh, we are so excited because we have our next event coming up July 10th. We have been waiting for this one for months. Sia, who is coming all the way to Dallas to visit with us?
We are honored to host Gwen Throckmorton over at this little social media company. Aaron, I don't know if you've heard of them. Facebook.
Oh, that book face company that people talk about?
Friendly Face.
I think my kids are on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Or well, my mom. Anyway.
She's the head of Emerging Entertainment Global Marketing Solutions. This person, can I just tell you, is amazing. Her background, again, everyone's got a unique story. She works for one of the largest organizations in the world, and she's got some challenges and some exciting stories for us to learn about. So I don't want to go into too much detail, but July 10th is our next event. So
City
definitely
Central.
At City Central, North Dallas.
Grab your tickets over at innovationcalling.com. This one is definitely going to sell out. So go to innovationcalling.com. You can grab your tickets right there. Wine, food, all of it will be there. So let's talk about Kristen, because this was a great one. We got a lot of great feedback. People actually were emotional in this episode. I love stuff like that when I can see it happening firsthand, of people just really connecting emotionally to the story of just somebody who rose to the top. So tell us a little bit about Kristen.
So Kristen Twining is the VP of Inside Sales North America region at Hewlett Packard Enterprise. And as we've mentioned before, she is a millennial, and her rise in a larger organization is extraordinary and very purposeful. And again, she just has that little inner fire and spirit that we've seen in all of our women guests. So without further ado, I would love for you guys to enjoy our time with Kristen Twining at HPE.
All right. Welcome to another episode of Innovation Calling. I'm Aaron Greger.
And I'm Sia Yasotornrat.
And we are here for another live podcast for our Women in Tech Leadership series. This is another, I don't want to say amazing. We're not going to say amazing or excited tonight, Sia, because those are our two go-to words. But Sia, I'm going to have you just do a very quick introduction on Kristen, and we're going to jump right in.
Absolutely. So, guys, give it up. We've got the VP of Inside Sales America at Hewlett Packard Enterprise, the one, the incomparable, Kristen Twining.
Hello.
She is so afraid of us right now, Aaron. I don't even know what to tell you.
No, I'm not afraid of you.
She's like, I'm not going to even acknowledge this. No, but thank you very much for joining us. You may not be aware of this, but this is a very lively group, and I see a lot of familiar faces here. So if you hear occasional heckling, just go ahead and ignore them.
Okay.
Because they're not heckling you. It's definitely us and our crew for sure. So just one cautionary note. Just lean forward.
Yeah, lean forward a little bit.
So I don't know if the pillow works for you or not. Or
no.
Oh, it didn't work.
I tried it. It didn't work out very well.
No? Okay, no. Good. All right, so let's kick this off with the very first and foremost question, which is HPE, 10 years. That's a long time in technology in general. So help me understand. Let's go back to 10 years ago. If you can hear that background rewound music. How did you come about and find HPE?
So it's actually a really interesting story. So I was graduating college, and I was actually enrolled in our master's program, which was an extension. It was about a year after graduation, and it was a full-time program. Deposit made, met with the team, and my mom says to me before I graduate, hey, through a friend of a friend, I found out HP is doing a college hire program, and I think you should apply. And I remember saying, no, Mom, I'm already committed to this, and I don't know anything about technology, not really sure this is really what I want to do, so thanks, but no thanks. You know, thanks for your networking, but not really sure. Well, she kept pressuring me and said, but I think you should just try it. So I remember it was a Thursday night. All my friends were going out. They're all going out to a bar. And my mom said, if you're going to try it. By the way, the deadline is, like, now. So you have to get it in by midnight tonight. So I was like, great. So all my friends are going out and I've got to sit there doing this application for a job that I don't really know if I really want. So went through the application process, and then I got a call about a week later from a recruiter, and I'll never forget his name. His name was Archie Bunker.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No lie. And I'm actually in the parking lot for something, just waiting, and I get this call, not prepared at all. Again, this is a job that I'm not really sure I want, right? And he starts asking me all these questions about technology, and I said, Archie, I really appreciate this, but I have to be honest with you. I really don't know the answers to these questions. But, you know, I'd be happy to maybe go research them and we could have a follow-on conversation. He goes, no, don't worry about that. Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? You know, I read on your resume, you studied abroad in Spain, but what's really interesting to me is that you're a dancer and you taught Latin dance, which I did teach Latin dance in college. And he said, tell me more about that. So I had this whole conversation about dance, and you know, I'm now in my element right now. I'm super confident. I can get through this. I can talk about dance. And so he's like, this is really great, Kristen. He has a lot of commentary. We hang up the phone. I get a call back a couple of days later, and congratulations, you got an offer. And I'm thinking to myself, because I call my mom after, Mom, I'm really sorry, but I think I let you down. Right?
Is it because you're like, I don't know this answer. I don't know that answer. Yeah. And the guy had to stretch.
And so from like a technology, you know, interview, I sat there and talked about dance the whole time. So I was like, Mom, I'm not really sure this was going to work out for you. But anyway, good thing I have a plan A, so we're good. I get the call back, got the job, ended up deciding to take it. Just it was something that after a lot of thinking, I realized that it was something I wanted to go ahead and give it a try. I think a little part of it was a bit of a challenge for me. School was kind of a natural progression of, I know I can do this, but going into a job that I was really uncomfortable and not sure of was something that I kind of thrive on, and that's actually continued throughout my career. So I did end up taking the job and reached out to Archie Bunker, by the way, to say thank you for the job, and he said it was your Latin dance experience and just your confidence in that conversation, because from a sales perspective, you can teach a salesperson technology, but you can't teach them that passion.
Yep, that and energy, said, that fire, yeah. Right?
And that's what got me the job. So.
Wow. Yeah. So I want to dig into, because I read an article that you wrote about this and you taking a job you didn't know. You were from marketing, right? That's what you studied in college.
I was, yep.
You referenced drinking from a fire hose several times, what it was like to drink from a fire hose. And I think a lot of people are fearful stepping in a role because they're going to feel like that. It's not comfortable. Were you taught that? Can you talk a little bit about what was that made you say, I don't know what I'm doing here, but I'm going to learn versus I don't think I should take this job because I don't know what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
What made you jump into that? Have you always been that way? Or was that just like a, you know what, why not?
So the moment I feel comfortable in something is the moment I have to question myself. I have always been an individual that's thrived on being uncomfortable and thrived on a challenge. So for me, when I see an opportunity that's going to give me a challenge, it's like that kind of feeling in me that says, oh my God, I don't really know if I can do this, but at the same time, I need to prove to myself that I can. For me, failure has never been an option. It's just simply not an option. I have had many situations, whether it's personal or professional, where that have been really challenging for me, and it's almost like I have to sink or swim. And I think a lot of that is based on some personal events that happened to me in my life. I lost my mother at a very early age. And it was one of those things where I had to rise up to that challenge. There was no option for me, right? I couldn't bring my mother back to life. And I had a 13-year-old brother that needed me. And so I had to be strong. And I think that has really taught me a lot just through my professional career is it's just not an option for me to fail. So I'm going to do everything possible to go try to figure it out.
Wow.
I mean, that drive there, I think it's almost like you have a very high emotional EQ, right? The fact that you took on that responsibility, you understood that your brother at that age, that's a very formative age, I think, for a child to lose a parent. How old were you, if I may ask?
I was 23.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. Yep. And does he not listen to you today like he didn't listen to you back then?
Actually called me today for some job advice, so yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
No, that's good. Great job. So, okay, let's take a step back. So you enter the world of corporate technology sales. It was inside sales, right? When you walked
in? No, actually. HP did kind of a new program where they decided to hire 11 of us across the U.S. in the field. It was a pilot program.
Okay.
Yeah,
you had an acronym in there in one of your writings. I'm like, what does this mean? I don't know what it was. So what was it exactly? When you first started that pilot program, there wasn't a... There's a title for it.
Oh, it was an ISS, which we call industry standard servers. It was an ISS sales role. Yeah.
Like how I pulled it out of you?
Yeah.
Because if you guys know anything about Hewlett Packard Enterprise, because I know you do, most of you, we like to speak in acronyms, and no one else understands what the heck we're talking about. So.
Yeah, when I first started HP, I literally got a 2-page document from someone that had every single acronym. And I was like, this is crazy.
I think that's I'm pretty sure it's on the website today.
I think it's like 50 pages now.
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah. No, it's bad when you have a life partner who's not in the industry and they actually understand the acronyms. That's where you guys need to worry a little bit more.
Yeah.
Tim knows what I'm talking about, but we won't mention that. But so, okay, so you're at Hewlett Packard, at the time it's Hewlett Packard, and you're learning, right? You are, I'm assuming they put you through a did you say it was 6 months of training and then you moved into a role?
No, it was 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Oh.
Yeah.
So that fire hose thing.
Yeah, it's real.
Yeah.
I'm curious. Okay, let's keep going progressive according to time. So we all make mistakes. We have missteps in some places. During that moment in time, was there one situation that you just bumbled over and then... Do you have any memories back then of anything that you might have learned from?
My first year, honestly. And it's interesting that you asked me about early on because I literally make mistakes every day. And it's in my job today, right? And that's how you learn. But I do have a couple of moments, and a lot of the new hires will ask me these questions, right? What was your biggest mistake? What was your biggest challenge? One that really always sticks out at me, and it's one of those memories that I can actually remember what I was wearing. I remember the sun was shining. I remember where I was sitting, and I remember just the whole day. And it was a customer meeting. I actually remember the customer, I won't say. It was for an account that was very, very upset with us. And had just out of courtesy invited me in to just kind of, you know, walk through what we've been up to lately. I had a whole presentation prepared, but I wasn't yet confident, right, in what I was articulating. And it took me so long to just write the notes, and but I didn't feel confident in it. And I knew I had prepared, but I just didn't feel ready or didn't feel that I knew yet. And I walked into the customer meeting, and I didn't have any resources with me. This was a meeting that I had to take on my own because I didn't have anyone available. So I went in, and I think I had one person dial in. And so I sat there, and I remember giving the presentation and, you know, going through my notes and kind of reading off the page. And they kept asking me questions, and I just didn't know the answers. And I kept writing down, I'll get back to you, I'll get back to you, I'll get back to you. And I just felt awful the whole time, right? Because I was like, God, I have about 50 pages of I'll get back to yous. And the customer was really kind of mean, right? It was just like, how come you don't know this? How come you don't know this? And, you know, it's a really uncomfortable situation. And at the end of the meeting, it just was clear that it didn't work out, right? And I remember just leaving the meeting, getting back to my condo, and sitting there on the stairs calling my mom just in complete tears. Oh my God, I can't believe I did this. I really don't know what I'm doing. And she just said to me, I think you just need to breathe. And I think you need to figure out and go back to those 50 pages and learn every single thing you didn't know and follow up with that customer. And that I did. And we actually ended up closing that customer.
Oh, wow. Good job.
Yeah. And I think the respect was you didn't know, but you took it and you followed up. And for me, it was a learning experience because I could have very easily at that moment just said, you know what, this is not for me. Marketing major, don't know technology, just, you know, got in a lot of heat with a customer and I'm done. But instead, I took that as I'm going to go figure this out because I hate how I feel and I'm never going to be in this situation again.
Oh, I love that.
No, that's awesome. I want to dig into the confidence because I love learning from people who teach us. Because if you're constantly pushing yourself and you're constantly like, I'm comfortable, I have to move on. Confidence is key, like no matter what you do. And it really is, I've seen people who are brilliant, but they're not confident enough. They have that, I need one more thing. But if you're getting in front of people constantly, where do you have like as you keep moving up, as you keep taking new roles, do you kind of get in that uncomfortable, I'm not confident right now, but I feel when I get to this point, I am? Or are you stepping in new roles now because of the lessons you learned previously and just like, I'm confident, maybe I don't know all this, but I'm confident I can get in front of a customer and I'm confident I can, to your point, say I don't know. Where is that piece for you? Have you learned just to, I don't want to say fake it till you make it because I hate that phrase, but you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, where do you actually feel you're comfortable enough? Because yeah. to be uncomfortable all the time takes a skill, but you can't be uncomfortable all the time in front of people.
Yeah, it's a really difficult feeling, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm going to answer just really honestly. There are days where my confidence level is just negative. I can never tell you that I am a 110% confident person every single day. I think it's a skill, but I think it's an evolution. Because confidence, you can have confidence in yourself and who you are, but you may not always have confidence in everything you're doing at every moment in time. And for someone to say they do, I don't know if I believe that, especially when you're getting, you know, outside of your comfort zone. When you're getting outside of your comfort zone, you've got to figure out how to be comfortable and confident in the zone that you're getting yourself into. But I actually equate it. I'm sure a lot of you work out, but one of the things I do is I work out at a place called Orange Theory. And one of the things they always talk about, okay, be prepared to get uncomfortable. And it's truly that feeling where you push your body to a point where you say to yourself, if I was on my own at the gym, I probably wouldn't push myself here, but because someone's telling me to go do it, I'm just going to do it because failure's not an option. But God, it's hard. And afterwards, you're just like dying, right? And initially, you don't have that confidence because you say to yourself, well, my body's never done this before. I don't know if I'm confident to do it, but you just kind of do it. Mm-hmm. And I think through doing it builds the confidence. So I don't know if it's always a black and white of, hey, I know when I get here, I'm going to be confident enough. But I can say that the more I think about it, the more I overprepare, the more I stress myself out, and my dear husband knows all too well the anxiety that I put on myself for certain things to be prepared for, the less confident I am, but the more that I just trust in myself and my abilities and the people around me that have put me where I am, the confidence starts to build itself back in.
No, I love it. I think these conversations are so important, especially for women to have, because I think it's crap like this that holds us back, where... I mean, there's days where I'm like, I can't do this. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not confident. I'm the only one who ever goes through this who feels this way, yet we're all go through this. It's the people that say, I got to keep going.
Yeah.
Sorry, so you mentioned, though, so obviously you are intelligent. You're driven. You have ambition. You are definitely, I can tell, you're a planner. But you mentioned that you networked with individuals when you first started. How did you know to network? Did someone tell you in advance, or did you intuitively just say, I'm now at this company, I'm going to network and I'm going to meet as many people as possible? What was going on in your brain to make the connections you have? Because you didn't move from job to job on your own. People helped you along in that process.
Yeah. I'm a really social person, and I'm very outgoing, and I like to make friends, and I like to know, you know, people around me, and I like to immerse myself in whatever I'm doing. And I think that was a big part of it, where, you know, when I first joined, you know, the professional world outside of college, I didn't know anybody, and especially when you're put into a field sales role, I actually, you know, for the team that I lead today from an inside sales perspective, you guys are so lucky, right? Because you get to be surrounded by people that are doing what you're doing every day. For me, I was thrown out into sort of this island on my own, and I could have sat there all day long by myself behind a computer, but that's just not my personality. So it was one of those things where it was an alignment with who I am, just from a social perspective of I've got to go out and meet some people. And I knew what I didn't know, and I knew that sitting and looking at flashcards and webinars is only going to take you so far, right? I mean, I joked about it, but I've got people in my career where I'm still friendly with one of my mentors from the very first day who took me on my very first meeting. And I basically would just beg him and say, take me to your customer meetings, take me to your customer meetings. And that was, you know, something that was the best way for me to learn. So I think from a networking perspective, no, nobody said to me the only way to success or the key way to success is networking. It was just showing up and just going to events and finding people and just kind of, you know, tagging along with them. Now, granted, there were some people who, no, thank you, don't really, you know, want this, but that's fine. Yeah. But I just kept trying because I knew that sitting behind a computer all day with flashcards was never going to get me to where I needed to go. And I think just with anything in life, when you're trying to learn something, you have to immerse yourself in it, and you can only read so much, which is very important, but you've got to put it into practice, and you've got to see it working, and you've got to see what good looks like, and you just got to get yourself out of your box, right? And you got to go meet people. So kinda it was an inherited.
Well, I think it's, again, that drive to do more than what you're already doing. You have that already in you. So, okay, you had a lot of experience with drinking from the fire hose. That's how you came up. Now you manage a team of over 400 people, which, by the way, 400 people, that's pretty impressive. You got to high five that, guys. I know. What is your philosophy now that you're driving this large organization, this team? Are they drinking out of the fire hose?
I think everybody's drinking.
Responding?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that I'm really focused on is driving transformation. And I think when you're going through transformation, you're going through change. And when you're going through change, you are drinking out of a fire hose because it's different every day, right? So I would say that in some cases, the organization as a whole may be going through it. But I think what's great about it is we're going through it together. I have a series of leadership principles that I shared when I, you know, kind of took on this new role and I continue to go back to is, you know, one of the things that's really important to me is empowerment, right? We have to empower our people to be a part of the mission that we're driving. And we have to trust in our people that the people that are in the roles that they're in are in the roles that they're in for a reason. And you have to give them that empowerment because no decision should be my decision and my decision only. Decisions should be made out of experience and they should be made out of facts. But most importantly, they should take into account what the team thinks and what the team does. When you're a leader, oftentimes you can find yourself a little bit far removed based on what you're doing on a day-to-day basis, but you have to make sure you take the pulse and you understand what's going on in the organization. And the best way to do that is to just be part of the team. Right. I say it all the time, whether it's when I welcome new hires or in team meetings or when I'm asking the team to really go focus on an initiative. We are a family. Right. HPE for me has been a family. I've grown my career here. I lost my mom here. I had my first child here. I met my husband here. I got married here. I mean, the list continues. Right. And so for me, it's a passion, but it's my second home and it's my family. And so really when I am trying to drive, you know, an organization to success, we're all in this together. Right. This isn't just a me thing. This is an us thing. And I think it's so important that if they're drinking from a fire hose, I'm drinking from a fire hose. And we're together, but we help each other through. And I think that's a big part of leadership is just knowing, just like with anything in life, that you can't do it on your own and you have to do it together as a team.
Can I talk a little bit more about your career too? Because obviously you've risen quickly. It wasn't by accident. You obviously took initiative. At what point did it become where it clicked, where you said, you know, it's more than just let me do some networking so I can learn this, let me immerse myself so I can learn this. But when you said, you know what, I'm rising in here, I'm growing. Like, when did it really become this moment of more strategy versus just learning?
Yeah.
And kind of what was that switch for you? And the second part, did you have somebody mentoring you and helping you up that ladder?
So like yesterday? No. No, I mean, I think, so for me, I always knew that I was a leader by nature. Whether that's, you know, as a child or just growing up, I always found myself just leading in
general.
Were
you bossy? No, I'm teasing.
My sisters and my brother would probably say yes. But I was a dancer, which is really interesting. And I attribute a lot of that to my success because it builds confidence. But at the same time, you find yourself kind of leading a lot in at least the way that, you know, that the companies and the part of what I was a part of. But I think my whole life, I've just always taken a leadership role in something, right? When I talked about my mom passing away, I had to immediately be a leader of a family, right? I had to make some really tough decisions. And so I think that, you know, when I transitioned into my professional career, even in my first job of, you know, an individual contributor, I found myself leading in an individual contributor role. And I think that's how you grow. And in the moment that you feel that even though you don't have the sort of, you know, organizationally functional role of being a leader, but yet you find a way to lead, I think that's when it starts to click in you that this is actually a skill that's within me, right? And this is not something that can be taught. You know, I've had many roles. Most of my career had been in an individual contributor role, but I think one of the things that made me stand out was the way that I would lead in those roles with people that didn't necessarily report to me, but rallied around the initiatives that we were trying to drive together. So I think that's when it started to click. It wasn't when someone tapped me and said, hey, we're going to, you know, position you as a manager or a level two director. It was when I started noticing that I was taking leadership initiative even when I wasn't in an actual leadership role.
That's awesome.
It's almost like the you do the role that you want to do for your next career kind of thing. You just assume that responsibility, yeah. Right? So let's talk about technology just for a quick second, not about the company that you were currently paying your salary, but there's discussion about women in STEM. And granted, you're more of a sales organization side of it, but what have you seen from when you started to where you are, fast forward 10 years, what are you seeing about women in STEM from a sales perspective?
Yeah, I think I have a really interesting perspective on that because, being in sales, I'm in technology sales, so that's the T, right? Mm-hmm. And I think not only was I in technology sales, most of my career was in financial services, right? So selling to financial services accounts. So between technology and financial services, it is a very male-dominated, right? It's kind of a double whammy, right? And so I think you very quickly notice that oftentimes you're the only female amongst maybe 8 or 10 males. But for me, I have to be honest, it was really one of those things where you notice it, but you don't let it drag you down. And you take the opportunity to just show that, yeah, I might be unique here, but for all these women who want to, you know, grow their careers and get uncomfortable into, you know, STEM positions, you've got to sort of stand up for that. And you've just got to say to yourself, yeah, I'm here and I'm going to do this, right? Because I belong at this table just like every other person. And I think having that confidence and being able to just say and kind of checking that at the door and just going into a meeting and just saying, it doesn't matter who's around the table. I am who I am. And I'm going to go ahead and lead this discussion the way that I know that I have to. I think that is what I want to do so that people want to emulate that from a female perspective. I mean, the statistics from just a STEM perspective in general, I know we continue to evolve, but I mean, women make up 50% of the workforce, but when you look at STEM, it's only 28% of the workforce.
Exactly.
Right? And then what's really interesting is when you take it back to foundational and early education, right? When you look at girls and boys do not differ in their abilities from just a mathematical and an engineering and just some of those, you know, whether it's in college or just even at the elementary school level, their abilities don't differ. It's the enrollment that differs. So when you start to get into later in life, when you look at enrolling in just think like honors classes or 81% of STEM enrollment is male. Right. So it's not about the ability, right? It's about the confidence to actually go enroll yourself. And I think that whether it's as a parent, whether it's as a leader, whether it's as a mentor, or a peer, we have to encourage females to just go, just be uncomfortable and just put yourself in those positions because, you know, it can start at a really early age. And I think we just have to encourage females. Just because it's a male-dominated industry does not mean that you can't make it in a male-dominated world and you can start to really shift the pendulum and make an impact to drive more females to these roles.
Did you ever look at it as an advantage? Because I'm curious, because I never looked at it in any of my careers as a disadvantage, but I was raised in a situation where my dad was like I played basketball and he was always like, beat the boys. Like, you know what I mean? Like I always looked at it as a challenge. Did you kind of see it as an advantage for yourself too, being in a room and being the only female?
Yes. Absolutely. You're unique, right? Yeah. And I think I'll never forget. So I have a customer. I still keep in touch with him today. He's one of my mentors in my career. And we went out one time for dinner, and he said to me, you know, I really want to help mentor you. And this was really early on in my career. And this was at a customer that was, you know, a really big customer. It was a big step forward for me. And I said, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And he said, but I want to explain to you why. And he said, you know, you as a female being unique, right, in a male-dominated industry will always get that first meeting, no matter what. You're always going to get it. He said, but your challenge and your goal is whether or not you can get that second and that third and that fourth and close the deal.
I think you can get that third, fourth meeting. Let's be honest. I personally experienced it where you meet a customer for a year and they never buy a freaking thing. And you're like, look, dude, I can only take you to lunch so many times before, you know, you're now costing me a lot of money.
Yeah.
Right. So I think it's the closing that I think is difficult for women. But I think that goes to asking, have you experienced this yourself, or actually as you manage this team now, have you seen the women stepping up to ask for whatever it is, the next step, the next opportunity? What are you seeing?
I see it in pockets, right? I like to say kind of just, you know, pockets of success or pockets of yes, where it, whether it's a female or a male, I'm always impressed by the way people put themselves forth and the confidence they have to say, hey, this is what I want and this is what I need. I think it could be better. I have the privilege of leading an organization that in some cases the tenure is, you know, less than 5 years. And I think that a lot of those individuals, from what I've seen, have done a really good job, whether it's female or male, positioning themselves to say, hey, you know, I've been here and I've done X, Y, and Z, and I want to know what it's going to take me to get here. So I've certainly seen more and more of it, but I think that there's an opportunity just from a female perspective to be confident in that you deserve just as much as that person sitting next to you. And you deserve to ask for it, and you deserve to have the mentorship and the guidance and the sponsorship to go get it. And I think that's the biggest piece. It's, again, it's just back to the encouragement of encouraging females to just stand up and to just ask for what they want. And I myself have struggled with that at times. I mean, when you're sitting with a group of all males and everyone's talking and you are, you know, for me, my tenure is just think maybe 10, 15, sometimes 20 years less than the people sitting around me. Sometimes you say to yourself, well, why are they going to care what I have to say? Or why are they going to listen to my ask? But you surprise yourself when you put yourself out there, because I think a lot of the times people are looking for that fresh new idea. And if you just sit and you don't ask it because you're afraid to, I think you're going to do yourself a major disservice. But it's a learning experience. It's not easy. It's hard. It doesn't come natural. And I think you've got to kind of almost put yourself out there and ask some things that maybe you're not always going to get, but you're going to learn something from the ask.
So I think we've covered, I think, the women topic. One thing that...
Can I go back, though, before you go? I want to know what the guy told you.
Which one?
The guy, the mentor that sat you down and said, you can get in. What did you do different in your career after talking to him to actually close the deal versus just get the first meeting?
So he basically told me, you are someone who, you know, will get that follow-on and close. And and it gave me a lot of confidence, especially because it was one of my first really large accounts. And I remember when he asked me to dinner, I was like, why does he want to go to dinner with me? Mm-hmm. Right. And it was amazing because this is a relationship that I have carried throughout my career. And I know I can always reach out to get guidance from. And I think for me, it was a bit of a turning point because I said to myself, wow, this is a really hard, you know, customer, one of our most strategic customers. This is, you know, I am the only female pretty much on the team. And this individual is basically saying that you have the knowledge and the skills to get you in the door, not once, not twice, not three times, but to actually close the deal. And that you should be proud of yourself for. And you almost don't recognize that, right? I mean, gosh, if I close a deal and the guy sitting next to me closes a deal, we all celebrate and that's great. But sometimes you have to take a step back and reflect, right? And say, wow, that was actually harder than I thought. And to have someone recognize that and to give you some guidance, but also be willing to invest his time and mentorship in you, just really told me a lot about I must have more than I think I do.
That's awesome. All right, sorry, Sia, go ahead.
Well, no, because Aaron likes to make fun of me because, full disclosure, I don't not like millennials, okay? But I do make comments every now and then because it's fun. But so, Christian, you're a millennial. That's not necessarily a bad or a good, that's your generation that you're born into. Just because my tone might indicate otherwise doesn't mean my actual sentiment. But okay, you're a millennial and you are in leadership. I think your path is extraordinarily unusual, especially with the reputation, unfortunately, that your generation is kind of generating. Is that right? Your generation is generating. That's kind of
that works. It works,
but it's kind of not as fluid. But anyway, if I have a niece that's 15 years old, and she's listening to you, and if you could talk to her and say, Haven, pay attention. You know, what is it that you would give guidance to as a millennial now to the next generation?
Think outside your world. I think oftentimes we just have tunnel vision and we don't understand the world around us. With social media and we are so ingrained in ourselves and we have to get ourselves out of ourselves. I was like that too, right? I didn't have the social media that we have today as a kid, but I was definitely in my own world like half the time. My biggest turning moment was when I decided to go study abroad and get myself literally out of my world. Knew nobody, did it on my own, and just wanted to have an experience that I knew would be uncomfortable, but I just had to go figure it out because I knew that there was something in me that was telling me, Kristen, you have to get yourself out of yourself. And I think that would be my biggest advice is to say for a moment, put the phone down, put everything down, and just get out of your world and go do something that makes you feel really, really uncomfortable because you can do that at 15, right? You can go volunteer or you can go take a trip or, you know, there are many things that you can do that will get you out of your comfort zone without your phone or without your social media and just be with yourself and be present for a moment because as you get older, it gets so hard to be present, but it becomes so much more important. In the role that I'm in, you know, I wish that there are days where I wish I was more present with my family because work is just constantly on your mind and you have to remind yourself to be present. And I think we need to teach that early on because if you look at millennials or I don't even know it's Generation Y or whatever it is.
Those damn kids.
I think they're Gen Z now is their actual name.
I mean, it's always on your phone and I know we're culprits of that too, but I just wish I could say to them sometimes, just put your phone down and just live because it goes by so fast, but there's so much you can learn from the world that's passing you by when you're looking at this.
That is so true.
I want to selfishly ask about motherhood too. You talked about having a baby, you know, as a mother of two, I know how hard it can be sometimes with the juggle. Has it changed your work? I don't want to say your work ethic, but your work style. Have you tried to find more balance, being more present? Has it been having the child that's helped you come to that realization or were you there before?
No, I was not there before. And I am just going to say it is hard. It is so hard. I cannot sugarcoat it. And for me, what's really made it easier is I have a really supportive and encouraging husband who literally will look me in the eye and tell me, you need to just shut it off and you need to be present with the family. And I know that sounds crazy because you would think that, you know, the instinct in a mother would just be to do that, but you just get so wrapped up. And you almost need someone to tell you just you got to stop, right? Yeah. And I think, you know, I can't sugarcoat it. Like I said, it's really hard because you're becoming a new mom. Your whole world is changing. You know, your dynamic in your relationship changes because you have this human that you have to take care of. And then at the same time, you've got this job that is not stopping, right? And it's actually, you know, scaling and growing. And you have no choice again that to not find that balance. And you know, people ask me all the time, how do I balance it? And sometimes I say, gosh, there are some days I just honestly don't. But you have to just tell yourself that, you know what, you just got to do it. And I'm trying really hard to get into a routine where I make sure that I at least can be home to put him to bed and to give him his last bottle. I mean, what, sometimes that's only 20 minutes, but if I can do that, I feel like I've had a successful day. And I thrive on my weekends more than I ever have in the past. And you just really have to try to balance it and to plan it. But I'm not always successful at it. But I think it's about the support and the encouragement that you have around you and someone to literally look you in the eye and say, okay, enough. Yeah. It's us time.
Put your phone down.
Yeah. Yeah. Put your phone down. Yeah.
So let me ask you about motherhood and career. Do you feel or see your peer group, your friends, your family pushing you in one direction or the other, challenging you on certain decisions?
No. So I have a really strong, kick-ass support system. I got some really strong females in my life, and my sisters are like the first that come to my mind. Two of my sisters have kids, they're working moms, and they inspire me every day. And they make it work, and they do it. And so I get that support right off the bat. My mother, working mom, just, you know, single mom for a while, and just everything she did was for her kids, and she made it work. My friends, you know, one of my best friends just had a baby, and working mom, high-powered woman. So I have surrounded myself with very strong, empowered women. But at the same time, I also have friends that are stay-at-home moms, and they're badass too, because that's a hard job as well. And I have so much respect for them, because when I was on maternity leave, love my kid, but spending 8-9 hours a day by yourself with your kid, like, oh my God, it's hard, right? So it's, you know, a job is a job, right? It's whether you go to the office every day or you are the sole caregiver for your kid, and they are both hard, and don't let anybody tell anyone different from a woman perspective, because it's just, both jobs are true jobs. But for me, I've got an awesome support system. I choose my friends wisely, and I make sure that, you know, I don't have a lot of time in my life, and the time that I have, I'm going to spend it with the people that are encouraging, are supportive, they're not negative, they're not toxic, because I don't have the time to kind of deal with other stuff that's just going to get in the way. So for me, I've got a lot of support because I've chosen wisely for the people to be around me to support.
And that is so critical. I think, especially at your age, I'm so impressed with everything that we're talking about. You seem to have accelerated learning lessons. I think you just nip things in the bud very quickly. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I have no choice. I mean, if you don't nip it, you're just going to dwell over it, and it's just going to cause me more anxiety than I actually need, because I've already got enough on my plate. So
it's just so mature, though. Like, I still don't have it figured out, and I've got like 10 years on you.
Exactly.
I'm like, sitting here feeling bad about myself. You need to leave.
No. No, <I'm> just,
wait, Erin, we chose each other as friends. I don't know, man. I don't know. No, but this has been so enlightening. And again, I don't want to be ageist, but I am, is to hear you talk. You speak so wisely. Your experiences are your own, but yet I feel very relatable to you. Everything you've talked about today. And I'm so impressed by you, and I do appreciate it. Thank you. I hope someone throughout your days says thank you to you, because sometimes in leadership you don't hear that as often.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. This has been an honor.
I'm going to cry, man.
No. I always cry. I always get teary at the motherhood talks, though, because it is so hard. And like Sia overheard us today. I was in a mastermind meeting, and the balance is the most difficult thing in the world, because you know you want to be there for your kids, but you also know there's going to be a sacrifice, and so you're constantly going like, okay, how, it's.
In
I
so
wish
many
I could
days,
tell you figure it out.
In so many days are just a. show.
Oh, yeah.
you just deal with it. Like, I mean, yeah. The things that happen to me and just like just being a mom and just, you know, sometimes you go to bed and you're like, how did I even survive this day? Like, it almost becomes so comical, you know, and you know, my husband is a very high powered working individual as well. And when he travels and I got to figure out a way to be home at a certain time, it's like, I got the kid, I got the dog, I got work. And oh my God, it's just such a shit show, and I only have one kid. Like, yeah. I can't imagine how this is gonna grow, right? But you make it work, and when he calls and says, "How's everything going?" You're like, "Everything's great. It's all going well." When are you coming home?
So, I'm looking at his face, by the way, and he's like, "I know that tone, and no, I know nothing's going right about now."
Yeah, it's fine.
You're so kind, because when my husband would be out of town and he'd call, I would never be like, "It's so great." I'd be like, "Why do you have to be out of town? This is like a nightmare." So I never put on the good face. But anyway, do we want to open it up for Q&A, or do you have another?
Well, no, I do have one other question. Do you feel, as a female and as a mother and a high-powered individual, do you feel pressure to be perfect in all those aspects?
Yes, absolutely. But I think a lot of that pressure I put on myself. Because I am a perfectionist at heart, and it's a strength and a weakness. So yes, I feel pressure to be perfect. And again, having the amazing support system in my husband, who looks at me and says, "You're perfect to me, but you don't always have to be perfect in everything you do. Like, it's okay if you come home late and dinner's not on the table, we can order out." Right. But for me, ordering out is like a failure. I'm like, no, I am going to make this work. Right. I'm going to do it all. But sometimes you got to take a step back and say, "God, I'm gonna go order Mexican food tonight, and it's gonna be okay, right? And everything's gonna work, right?" But I think I feel the pressure to be a perfectionist. But most of it, I'd say probably 75 to 80% of it, is because I put that pressure on myself.
So you've got a team of folks here that work in your organization. I mean, you're being very candid and very honest. Mm. Do you feel like you should put up a front, though, to say, "Hey, I am that example of whatever success is deemed"? These individuals are either starting out in their careers, or they are established, but they, you know, are working towards different stages of whatever career that they're pursuing. Do you feel like you have to put up a front for your team?
So I'm going to answer this in two ways. So the first way, absolutely not. Because if I did, I wouldn't be real, and it would all be a lie, and I'd be showing them something that's not reality, right? So no. I mean, do you have to put yourself up every day and no matter what's going on and put a smile on your face and kind of have some sort of a presence so people don't think the world is falling? Yes, right? But to not be open and honest about every day and the realities of being in leadership and being a mom and being a wife and being a friend and having a family, no, because you'd be setting them up for something that's not real. But if you had asked me that question a couple of years ago, I might have answered a little bit differently.
How so?
And because I didn't know what I didn't know. And I remember, so this is actually not even a couple of years ago, sorry, last year when I was pregnant, I remember going out to dinner with a friend. I had just moved to Texas, and I had to go to Austin for a work trip. And we have some friends that live in Austin, and I had just moved here, and I really didn't know many people, and I was pregnant, and I was just feeling so down, and I just had this really high-powered job, and I just was kind of freaking out about, oh my God, I'm going to have this kid and a job, and I don't know what I'm going to do. And she's a high-powered woman as well, and an executive as well, and she's currently a mother of one, and she's expecting another child. And we sat down and had dinner together, and I just kind of lashed out and just was, oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. How do you do it? And she was like, calm down. And she said, you know what's going to make you do it is you got to be honest with yourself, and you just got to be real. And if you're leading a team and you're a mom and you got to go home at 5 o'clock, go home at 5 o'clock. Right? It's okay to go home. It's okay to shut down. It's actually one of those things that if you stay and you're constantly on and constantly on and don't have any break in between, people are going to say to themselves, wow, she's doing really good in work, but is she really balancing family?
Yeah.
Right? And you need to set yourself up, and you need to be, if you want to be someone that other people want to emulate, you have to be real. And she really opened my eyes to that, because, you know, she said, I was in the same boat as you, but I had my baby and just perspective is different, and my team respects me more of what she told me is her team respects her more because of the real person she is. So I think that you have to be real. You have to put on a presence, and you can't, you know, you can't, you know, show everything that's happening, but at the same time, you just have to, you have to be real.
So it's almost like saying it's okay to show some vulnerability. I mean, because it's real.
Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting because oftentimes you don't see leadership wanting to show vulnerability, right? Because that's deemed weakness, right? Which I think is indicative of millennials. I think millennial generation is much more in tune with their emotions to say, hey, there are some things that I can and cannot handle. And I think that's going to change the way we do business, quite frankly. And I think we're seeing that with a lot of the women that we're talking to. So
yeah, it's not easy, but...
So if you have some parting thoughts. Okay, so we've got a group of individuals here. If you look at the room, you have a big mix. Kristen, if you look out, you could actually see some millennials. There's some Gen Zs in the back that's hiding. She's probably like really bitter with me right now because she probably put her phone down just 2 seconds ago. And then you've got some of those that have been, you know, well-tenured is what I will call it, in their careers.
We won't pick you out accordingly, don't worry.
Don't worry about it. But okay, so if you could give your advice from your perspective, what you're seeing that is your path to success, is there a quote or a saying that you give yourself to inspire yourself?
There's probably many quotes. Like I have said many times, don't be afraid of being uncomfortable. Be great, not good, right? Believe in yourself. Be confident. I think also just don't be afraid to fail. I mean, I know failure is not an option, but there are little things along the way that you're going to make some mistakes on that are ultimately going to, if you learn from them, they're going to prohibit you from failing, right? It's, you know, something I read recently, and this is something that I really took near and dear, was because I move 1,000 miles a second and 1,000 miles, you know, a minute. I'm just always going. And you've got to reflect and you've got to take a step back and you have to say to yourself that you cannot fix it in a day, but daily you can work to fix it. And I think you really have to just remember what the big picture is, but don't expect that you're going to get from 0 to 60 in the matter of a minute, right? It's just not going to happen. But it's the progress that you make on a daily basis together with the people around you and the support and your team and your family and your friends. It's amazing when you look back after, you know, 14, 30, 60, 90 days and you say to yourself and you reflect on, wow, I actually accomplished a lot, right? So just always have that big picture in mind, but know that and be honest with yourself and know what you can and cannot do and how long it's going to take you to get there, and know that it's okay to not fix everything in a matter of a short amount of time. It's about what you're fixing and what you're progressing on each and every day.
That is awesome. On that note,
I think we got to close one out there. So quotable, Kristen, right there. Yeah, tweetable.
Exactly. Like Aaron and I are like, oh, that was done. We're done. We're like, that's a perfect end. Okay. So on that note, Kristen, thank you so much for your time. And thank you for joining the Innovation Calling podcast. Aaron, anything else you'd like to add?
No, we'll open it up for Q&A now.
All right. Excellent. Hey, guys. And thanks for joining us. Bye.